Let's go back to Darwin for a moment, because you do pick apart some of his theories. Where did he go wrong?
Well, I think he may not have gone terribly wrong for his time, because there was some logic to the fossils, you know, getting more complex. There was some logic to us coming from the sea. He relied a little bit on information from a famous geologist, and his findings suggest that there was a progression. And so using his sitting room or whatever it was, and in his day he did more thinking as a scientist than he did experimenting, it made sense to him, you know. And so, and he saw in domesticated animals that you could breed them into better this or better that or bigger something. And so it all made sense to him, and it made sense to a wide audience. And so I don't know that he went wrong at his time. But science has moved on now, and yet it's holding on to this almost as if their life depended upon it. And I think whether God did it or God didn't do it, you still need to look under the hood to see how the engine works. And you can separate these issues. We still have to understand what's going on.
Might they both be right, Jeffrey? I mean, what's wrong with the Darwin theory of evolution that is backed up by intelligent design?
Well, some people do argue intelligent guided design, and that's not unreasonable. Also, one has to explain these huge gaps and how such monstrous complexity, overwhelming complexity, came about suddenly and without the intermediate steps. They're missing. And not only are they missing, but even if they were there, they'd be useless. So you can't go step by step by step. For instance, if you were to build a suspension bridge between two peaks, you can't just put a board after a board after a board. You got no suspension bridge. You just got something going down one side of the mountain. Mm-hmm. And so when you look at how these species change, that's what you have to have this whole thing happen. Now, one of the famous things about Darwin's theory is the finches on the Galapagos Island. There's about 14 different types of beaks, and they connect that to, you know, how that bird could survive on that island, you know, a longer beak for certain food gathering, a bent beak for another. And so the idea was that the animal would change based on the need. And this became a common theme for, and still is, as to what happens. But what they found recently, not very recently, but recently, is that if you mix those birds back up again, they just kind of go back to the old form. So what it really says is that within this particular species, there is this capability to adapt to changes in the environment. Now, the bird didn't change to another animal, but it did have the ability, just like a bacteria can become resistant to an antibiotic, the bird had the ability through environmental pressures and selection of, you know, the better breed or the better trait to change its beak on a temporary basis, but always retained that ability to go back to the previous or the old way. And so his laws work, but they don't work, as I keep saying, you know, from species to species. There is no dog that became a cat, to make it real simple. And one of the famous fossils is the Archaeopteryx, which is the feathered reptile.
Mm-hmm, right.
About 150 million years ago, it was about that old, and that was thought to be a missing link to birds. Well, in recent days, they have found birds that are just as old in the fossil record. So that kind of put a kibosh on that. But what was missing, suppose that really was the beginning of birds coming from reptiles, how did this thing change its bones to a lighter bone? How did it get rid of its teeth? How did it learn to fly and handle off drafts and down drafts? How did it learn to land on a tree without crashing into it? I mean, how did it learn to make a nest and lay eggs? And all these things are not explained. It's just, if you go to the textbook, there's the Archaeopteryx, and then there's the bird. It's missing. The same thing with the bat. The bat has knees facing the opposite direction, and they lock, and it hangs on the ceiling of a cave. Well, there are no species with in-between knees, and there are no instances that are proven, at least, of bats falling off the ceilings until they finally got it right. You know, the skunk. I mean, did the first skunk have a perfume smell, and it didn't work, and he got clobbered? until finally some skunk came up with a nasty smell.
Well,
these intermediate things are crazy. They're not there. And they're not findable even, you know?
Well, to cover this missing gap here, is it possible, just possible, that there was some kind of extraterrestrial intervention, something that has already been in the universe, that was already created, that somehow jump-started, as some theories have said, jump-started humankind on this planet?
Hey, anything's possible, and some people think that we were the garbage that they left behind, and when they cycle back and see what happened, they're going to wipe us all out. But I don't know. Well, then how did they get created? It kind of begs the question. But
well, eventually there is that, yeah, you know, divine creator. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, to explain this missing gap, which is dramatic.
Unless they dropped human beings out of their, you know, spaceship, one still has to explain how the monkey got to the human being. And there are a lot of steps. There's a lot of similarities, but there's a lot of steps, too. And how did whatever precede the monkeys, and nobody knows what precedes the monkeys. If you look at the fossil record, you find that there's a big gap there. They forget to tell you. They like to say that the monkey preceded the man, but they don't tell you what preceded the monkey. And maybe it was a rodent, but they don't really know. Another thing that's left out a lot is something called the Cambrian explosion, which happened 500 million years ago. And there were thousands of species that we don't see nowadays that we have fossils of that showed up suddenly. They exploded on the scene. Exploded means millions of years, but in the general scheme of things, they suddenly showed up without precedence. Suddenly there were all these kinds of species, and we hardly have any of their descendants from them as well, and so nobody can explain that. And now in China, there's a huge excavation going on in an area I can't pronounce that's finding similar things as that we were finding in Canada up by Lake Louise area. And the Cambrian explosion. So, and it goes on and on. This book that I talk about, Hitchings, The Neck of the Giraffe, there is no animal that they have found that has an in-between neck. This neck is huge. There ought to be some intermediate species. There is none. And the blood pressure, the giraffes are interesting in of itself. Talking about design, when a giraffe has, from my reading, I've never watched a child, a giraffe be born, but from my reading, they have razor sharp hooves. But when they're born, they come out with these gelatinous covers on these hooves, so the mother isn't injured. And so the baby's born, it drops 7 feet. Within a half hour, it can run away from predators, but it also hasn't injured the mom. So were there baby giraffes way back when that had no gelatinous covers and killed off their moms? No, of course not. So how did this design come about? And also, the giraffe's got a design with a reservoir-type thing in its head. So when it bends down to drink water, its head is not flooded with blood. And if there's a predator in the vicinity, it can swing its head back up and take off with the proper blood pressure. And so, again, this is hard to have an in-between.